Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. And I am your host, Liv, and today I'm here with something very special, and it is a re-airing of a conversation I had last year with Mary Phillips of Myths and Tits. She is a queer artist covering originally Greek mythology, but expanding into so many more fascinating mythologies, including Welsh, which she is. We had an incredible conversation. We've been sort of Instagram friends for a while, so it was so lovely to talk to her. And we talked about queer representation in mythology and larger. So that is the episode you're going to have today. Because, and you know I'm all just honest about this, I've been really busy and I haven't had time to edit something new. But next week, you're going to have a very special episode with Lisa Charlotte of the Sweet Bitter podcast. She and I talked very fast and loose about Sappho and the things that Sweet Bitter has learned along the process of their podcast. That's going to come after a traditional Sappho episode. So much Sappho. And then the week after that, you're going to hear an incredible conversation I had with Julie Levy all about asexuality in Greek mythology. That is something she has studied very closely, and it was utterly fascinating. Honestly, I just know you're all going to love all three of these conversations as we continue on with the fun that is Pride Month. So once again, happy Pride, friends. This is episode 87. The gods were all a little gay. LGBTQIA representation in mythology. Myths and Tits has been one of my favorite artists for a while now. I learned about Mary when she sent me some beautiful pieces way back, and I now have quite a few of them framed in my apartment. Her Medusa is a particular favorite, but then it's Medusa. So here is my conversation with her. It was so much fun, though, finally speaking with this person I've been Instagram friends with for so long, and such a thrill speaking with someone who loves mythology like I do.
So, hiya, my name is Mary Phillips and I'm from Cardiff. I'm an illustrator. I'm also known as Myths and Tits, and I like to illustrate all your favourite gods and goddesses, and with the inclusion of LGBTQIA community and female sexuality.
So you did tell me earlier, before we were recording, that you got started partially because of my podcast, which is the coolest thing I've ever heard. But other than that, so what got you interested in working with mythology and the artwork that you're doing now?
Yeah, when I graduated university, I was really interested in sex education. So I just wanted to comment on social issues, always wanted to do something to do with feminism and LGBT community and like giving those people a voice. And when after I listened to the podcast, I was just like, well, these amazing characters, we haven't actually listened to these stories in such great depth and actually given these characters a personality. And I just couldn't wait to like draw them and just give them a personality, give them a bit of sass, show them in their bedrooms and, you know, their sexual kinks and all that. I just couldn't wait to do it. I was just so excited.
That's so much fun. And that's what makes them so cool, is that they are like, they have so much personality, your interpretations of the gods and things. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I do try and make people laugh as much as possible. It probably gets too much sometimes, but I just love it.
I mean, hey, it's working. I really want that Dionysus one you have, just like surrounded by the wine. That's gonna be my next purchase.
That's a favorite at the moment. But yeah, that was one of my favorite ones. I think it was because I drew him with a mullet, then with a mullet. And because I've got a mullet and all my friends have got a mullet, and I was like, right, I've got to do one dedicated to the mullet. And it was when Tiger King had come out as well. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, what a coincidence. And I think that's why people were just so attracted to it. And I did animal print in the background as well. So
that certainly helps. That's so much fun. So who are your favorite queer characters in Greek mythology to draw, and for their personalities or whatever, and why? Like, tell me about that.
So one of my queer favorites is Artemis. I just love how she's so mysterious. Like, everyone always thinks like, oh, she's a virgin, you know, she has no sexual orientation. But I like to go in deeper within like Greek mythology and actually think about her a bit more. Like, she has all these female followers and, you know, she likes to be by herself. And just, I think I really want to delve in deep with like female sexuality and figure out why they are perceived as being virgins, because I highly doubt that they're virgins, to be honest. Or else if they are, then it's probably their choice. You know, I like to go deep in within asexuality. Are they a lesbian? Are they queer? I just think that Artemis is so intriguing to me.
Yeah, I've always been really interested in her too, and sort of what is there. I recently, some people were talking on Twitter about whether she is, you know, maybe asexual or sort of a similar identification. But I often wonder about her. I think that, I often wonder if because they called them virgins, whether that actually meant that they were lesbians, and in the ancient Greek world, lesbian sex wouldn't be like understood the same way, and so they would consider them virgins, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I found out within some of my research that obviously gay sex was really accepted, and male romantic love was considered the highest form of love and adoration. And I just wonder sometimes, like, why didn't they bring it up? I know that women were thought of as like a lesser class than men back in those days. But if they had female gods, then surely they would be represented amongst the women in their own lives. But I think just they just didn't really want to, they weren't interested enough in female sexuality, were they really? But it was Dionysus. They're the person who like brought it out of them, you know? And that's why I really enjoyed drawing Dionysus as well, because he definitely does it for the girls and the gays. And that is it.
He does.
Like, he does. Yeah. I love it.
He's amazing for that. I mean, honestly, yeah. He's just like, I mean, without being the god of sexuality, he's the god of sexuality.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a huge part of my show, without necessarily like, you know, diving into any kind of accepted academic research on the subject, but is talking about so much of what we do and don't know because of the way that women were treated. Like, I think probably if you were able to actually go back there, you would find representations of lesbianism more openly, and you would meet women who were obviously lesbians in some way or another, you know, it would be hard for them to live like that just because they weren't citizens or like considered people without men involved. So that's always a fun aspect of it. But yeah, I mean, because the thing is, what we have, you know, the stories that we have were for the most part told by men. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while I get an angry person on the internet who wants to yell at me about how women obviously were like, you know, as a mother figure would have told stories as well. And I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
But they didn't write them down. So it's not the same. Like, you're not able to say that everything we have in Greek mythology is based around women because, oh, women probably told stories. It's like, yeah, they probably did, but women weren't allowed to be writers or playwrights or anything. So we don't have their stories.
Yeah, exactly. They weren't given the opportunity to write those stories down. But I just keep on thinking, like, how amazing would those stories be? They would be so full of some sass. I would love to hear some of those.
Well, yeah, you think about the stories we do have from ancient Greece and how much personality and insanity and just, you know, the drama they like to have in their stories. Like, yeah, imagine if women were allowed to have the same level of personality and the same level of storytelling as the men were. Like, oh, what a world we'd have.
I know.
I think about that a lot, just in terms of what we don't have, even from the men too, just what's been lost because nobody copied it down or it got burned up or, you know, the number of things that we don't have from ancient Greece.
Yeah, like I want to know a bit more about Hermaphroditus's life. Like, I know about their, you know, the way they were conceived, and I would just love to hear about, you know, how they went through life and if they were accepted or not accepted, because I think they probably would be accepted if the story was so, you know, so famous and so popular. And I think it would really help, like, this new generation to figure out who they are and, like, to actually be inspired just to, you know, that, you know, they have that story from the past to keep on living, to hold themselves and to be proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many stories like that. I mean, Hermaphroditus is such a good example. And then the number of trans stories we have proves that the ancient Greeks absolutely understood that trans people were real and that they deserved to be understood and recognized. And they found ways of incorporating that into their own world. And that's something that, number one, should be taken today. Like, you know, if everyone's going to base their lives around everything the ancient Greeks did back then, like, why are we not using that as obvious proof that they understood trans people? So why the hell aren't they, you know, understood today?
Yeah, exactly. And in a way, you know, Greek mythology is thought of as being so grand, and like when you go to an art gallery now and you see all these sculptures and you think, wow, these are amazing, and these are the gods that everybody looked towards to, you know, to be inspired by, and they've inspired so many like pieces of literature, art, everything. And you just think, why can't we look back at that and think, that's how I want to live my life, and that's how, you know, I'm so inspired by this, and it's just going to carry on from there.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are so many problematic things that people attribute to Greek, like ancient Greece, and that's why those are okay. Like, I mean, so many aspects of the horrifying resurgence of white supremacy right now are based around this, like Western civilization bullshit. So it's like, well, if you can pull Western civilization as your, you know, reason for the ancient Greeks being the top of everything, like, why not also notice that, hey, they had many trans stories.
Yes,
they
exactly.
clearly recognize them as people. Like, yeah, so do you have any, I'm trying to think of if I know if you've worked on any particular trans characters from mythology in your art or anything, or do you have anything sort of planned there?
So I really love the story of Iphis and Ianthe, but I've always found it quite a complex story. And before I even illustrate something, I kind of like to get to the ends of it. And I'm afraid of like offending people sometimes. I'm just always too cautious, because obviously you should be cautious and you should think about it really hard. And I always think whether or not Iphis is a trans character or maybe they're a non-binary character. And yeah, but I think it is open to interpretation. And just, I think if we open up that conversation amongst people, and I've been thinking of illustrating her and bringing up a conversation amongst my followers. So people who may identify as non-binary or trans can maybe suss out who they are, you know? Mm-hmm. But I do really love that story, and how I always think about whether or not Ianthe was just supporting them throughout the whole time. And I always think they were like childhood sweethearts, but Iphis was holding this secret inside of themselves. And after the transition, like, whereas when, like, Ianthe was like, yeah, you're great, you are who you've always wanted to be, you know, and I stick by you with that. And maybe it was a problem with the parents rather than Ianthe.
Yeah, I would interpret it that way too. And it is so complex, because it was also the ancient way of understanding it, you know, it's,
yeah, kind
of, it's multiple stories in one.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always different versions of different stories. But I think if we just, you know, talk about them more and bring them up into conversation, then it just sparks more conversation rather than decision making and judgment straight away. So, I love that story.
Absolutely. No, I actually didn't know that story before I found it for the podcast. And it was such a thrill discovering that one, which is kind of how I feel about any sort of one in Ovid that I didn't know about beforehand, because he's just so beautiful with everything that it just makes it so much more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, I did like a short course on Greek and Roman mythology at the start of lockdown, because I was like, right, now's my chance. And I actually got to look through like Ovid and like all the theories behind it, and just, I know, it just opened my eyes really to just new ways of visualizing these gods and goddesses and just amazing people.
Yeah. Did you learn anything particularly interesting about Ovid? I haven't ever taken a class on him, and I love him, so I should learn more about him as a person, but instead I just read Metamorphoses over and over.
Yeah. So I learned that he prefers to speak about bodies and like functions and like more of nature. So you can see that he often like, there's transitions between human and animals and all of that, and there's more blood and guts rather than just skimming over it and just being like, oh, you know, this happened. Like, he really goes in depth with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like, the nasty, gory stuff, because that's so primitive. And it just, I like seeing the inner depths of people. So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's what I love about him, and similar with Euripides, is neither of them strayed away from like it just being like visceral and violent. Yeah, it's such a good, they're just so entertaining in that way, both of them.
Yes, definitely. And it's just the goss, the gossip. I was going about the goss. I love the goss.
Yeah, Ovid was very good for that, for sure. And Euripides, both of them. Yeah.
But the way that they show like female characters as well, they really do give them more of a voice. And I just love it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously they're my favorite. I talk about it a lot, but specifically because, I mean, they're so visceral. And then the way they clearly understood women as people, as in a way that most other ancient Greek men did not.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember his name though. The poet who was a shepherd, Hesiod. Oh, I bought a book at the start of lockdown as well, and it was just a little part of like how, what he thought of women, and I was like, oh my god, this is where it came from. This is where it came from.
Absolutely, absolutely. He sees it as a disaster when it comes.
He's horrible.
Yeah,
so horrible. The way that he spoke about Pandora, you know.
Oh god,
disgusting. But it kind of goes to show that. So Ovid was able to see women in a different light, even though he did portray them as being like still quite nasty beings. But you know what? Women can be nasty sometimes, just like Medea, like with the Euripides. Like, it's really important to show like all sides of a woman, like complex characters, rather than just being the housewife or, you know, like Aphrodite, goddess of love and femininity. You know, there's another side to her as well.
Absolutely. And it just is about the way that some of them did it, in a way that Medea is horrifying, but also really sympathetic at the same time, in a really complex way that shows that she's a complex, real human versus, yeah, just sort of a stock photo of a woman.
Yeah, 100%.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
And I really liked how when I was doing my week on Dionysus, and I learned that during Dionysia, so when they would see the play at the end of the 3 days, they would show those plays to spark conversation amongst the crowd. And there was one part of it where they were singing the song of the goat, or the cries of the goat. So they would slaughter a goat at the play, and then they would air out their grievances, so everybody would speak, and women were allowed to watch the plays as well. So it's like the men actually got to see a different side of the women, and actually listen to their problems and their issues and their emotions. And I just think that that was a good time in Dionysia to spark, you know, arguments, not arguments, but, you know, so everybody could have a fair share and, yeah, a fair say.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I didn't know that, actually. That's really, really interesting. I wanted to look up more on that festival in general, just because it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And like one part, they were talking about your heartbeat. So as you're watching the play, your heartbeat syncs with everyone else in the arena. So that's how everybody would be feeling the same emotions of like guilt and pity throughout the whole play. So if you're watching Medea, everybody's feeling the same emotions and, you know, everybody's got an understanding of it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I find myself at a loss of adjectives when when I hear stuff like that, and I just repeat the word interesting constantly.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, obviously I love this stuff, but my God, learning more of it. Yeah.
I got that from Ancient History Fangirl.
Oh God, how do I not know it? I'm friends with them. I'm gonna get on that.
They're amazing.
Oh, I know. I love them so much.
They're fab.
What are your thoughts on Tiresias, if you have any, in terms of trans characters specifically, I guess?
So with Tiresias, I find, so Tiresias was transformed into a woman as a punishment, was it?
Yes, and then transformed back.
And then transformed back, and then shamed because he let slip that women have better orgasms.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, well, thanks for letting that out. I mean, someone had to. I mean, it's only a matter of time, but I wish that he would have stayed as a woman, to be honest, and got to experience a bit more rather than just saying, you know, what happens when we have sex? Why didn't he experience more of being a woman? There's more to us than just that.
Absolutely, God. Well, and it's, you know, he wasn't able to reveal that while he was a woman, he had to become a man again in order to reveal that truth. Yeah. That one's interesting, and it's sort of, it's so very brief. Like, I don't even know if I've fully told the story yet because it's so short that it just doesn't even come up with a full episode.
Yeah, those are the only facts I've researched into because I just want to know more. But I'm so fascinated because that's the thing with myths. Like, you could just take something and run with it because there's so many versions of it already that you could create your own episode and just go into the life of Tiresias as a woman, and you could do it through a female voice then. I think it's a good idea. You can create a story. But yeah, I think it's an important part of, it's an important thing to have a male transitioning into a woman, but I feel like there's not enough context of himself as a woman for it to be really, not important, but obviously it's still important, but just more effective.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's interesting because it's such a minor part of his life, whereas he was known for being such an important prophet in so many stories.
So intelligent.
And he's, you know, he's vital in so many different really important stories like Oedipus and I'm going to forget other ones, but lots.
Yeah. Is he in Odysseus as well?
Odysseus goes to see him in the underworld. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's like that also never really seems to come up. It's sort of an afterthought, like, oh, yeah, there was that time that he was transformed into a woman and then he was transformed back. One thing I do always enjoy, though, is that I forget if which direction the transformation happened because of this, but one of his transformations happened because he saw two snakes having sex.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so it was like either he saw two snakes having sex, so he was transformed into a woman, or he saw them and he was transformed back into a man. But either way, it was because he witnessed snakes fucking.
I mean, well, we better be careful next time we go to the zoo. That's all
I'm
saying.
Definitely.
Absolutely. I mean, if I could experience just being a man for a day and then, I would do it. Try it.
Yeah.
I think we all should.
Well, absolutely. I think you get a whole different, you know, understanding of the world.
Yeah, definitely.
I think men should experience being women for a day even more so. But
yeah, I think, yeah. But I don't think they'd be able to cope that well, really. I think we'd see right through them.
Yeah, they're not prepared for it.
There is, like, I like the story of Callisto and Diana.
Oh, yes.
So when Zeus appeared as Artemis and seduced Callisto as Artemis, because Callisto was such, you know, she looked up to Artemis, and she was in love with her. She absolutely adored her, and she looked up to her like a high priestess. And just to see that love, like, that's why I interpreted them as an actual couple, because I wanted to see that happen. I didn't actually want Zeus to come into it at all, and I never really draw Zeus, because I feel like there's been enough of him. We've had enough. Give everyone else a chance. But yeah, I really like them as a couple, and I just want to see them thriving. I just want to create a new myth where they are like the lesbian power couple.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I think that they have a really lovely story that's then ruined by everything else.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad. There's so many.
Everything.
He ruins everything. There's so many beautiful paintings of them two together that you just kind of think, oh, they probably did. It probably did happen at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Artemis never punished her, and everyone lived happily ever after.
She was never turned into a bear. That didn't happen.
Maybe after her death, so that the, you know, constellation can still exist. But it was after a natural death, after a good long time.
Good long life.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, I don't know. Who's your favorite? Who would you say is your favorite character?
I mean, I think I, along with so many other people, was so affected by the Song of Achilles.
Yeah.
That I developed a love for Patroclus that I didn't have before.
Yes, he's everyone's favorite, like, himbo. That's my new favorite one at the moment.
He's just, I mean, and it's that book, right? It's book more than it is anything that's said in the Iliad. But it just depicts him as the most wonderful man. And you just want everything good to happen to him and nothing horrible ever to happen to him. And you want Achilles to be nicer and a better boyfriend.
I know. They could definitely make a movie. I don't know why they haven't done that yet. Oh my God.
No, and instead Troy has Achilles and Patroclus as cousins, which makes me angrier than I could ever say.
Cousins. Oh, why? What is so bad?
It's just it makes them cousins, and Patroclus is like really young. It's like his like baby cousin who Achilles is like watching over in that movie. It's so gross.
No, I don't like that. We don't like that. No.
No. And even in the mythology, even if you ignore their relationship, as so many translators and mythologers do, like, they're still not cousins.
No, don't do it. Don't make it weird.
Exactly. They're not related, no matter what.
Exactly. Because people are going to be watching that after reading the book, and they're like, what? Like, this is weird. This is going down a different route. This is not what we wanted.
The myth of Hyacinthus and Apollo, when he turned him into a hyacinth.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, which is, God, so tragic. I love that one, but it's so sad.
I love it too. That was one of the first ones that I really like fell in love with, and I love Hyacinthus. Like, he's one of my favorites because he's everyone's favorite. Like, he is the it boy. Like, everyone wants to get with Hyacinthus. And just learning about those flowers and like knowing where they come from. And my grandmother actually, she's a flower expert, and she always used to sprout these stories of like where they come from, where the names come from. So it's quite nice to share that knowledge with her, to be like, oh, this came from ancient Greece sort of thing. But yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah. To have that connection. Yeah. That story, I love it. I mean, I also think it's one of, I mean, there are definitely a few, but it's one of the ones where no matter who, is telling the story and how homophobic they are, they can't get away from the fact that they had like a real and true romance, and they were simply in love, and there's nothing else you can take from it. There's no way to like, you know, walk your way around it or anything. It's like, no, Apollo and Hyacinthus were in love.
Yeah. And there's real, you know, there's real emotion in it as well. There's real jealousy between men, real, you know. And that's really interesting, because you'd never really talk about men's emotions in that kind of way towards sexuality and sex.
Yeah, that's so true. So
amongst other men anyway, like within Greek mythology. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it is, I think it's rare in general. So to have that, where it's, they have a very, very human relationship with its jealousies and its complexities and I mean, less so with the horrifying death, but...
Yeah. I mean, Apollo is one of the gods that I literally just think, why? Why are you doing this? Because you have so much potential of being like Dionysus. But to be honest, we need those guys, really, don't we? And he's proud to be bi, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just, you know, loves who he loves at any given time.
And he's kind of like Zeus, where he'll just have sex with anyone. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
No. And, you know, Apollo's a little less horrific. So that's something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a bit nicer.
Yeah.
I've got like Hestia and Athena as well. Now, I think Athena, I read that she used to have like consorts, female and male consorts. And I think Athena could possibly have had more of a sexuality than we know. What do you think?
Interesting. I haven't done that much digging on her for that reason, but that would be really interesting too. Because I'd love to know more about that. I mean, it's so hard with those ones similar to Artemis to know, you know, what was really believed back then if you were to talk to everybody.
I know it's difficult with that that threesome of women, Artemis, Athena and Hestia, the virgins. But yeah, that's why I kind of did my celibates poster, to kind of give explanation towards why they might be celibate, because celibacy is a choice for yourself, not for anybody else to, you know, nobody can tell you to be celibate or like force you into doing that. So I kind of wanted to give them a voice and a reason to tell people why they are. So like Hestia, I find she's quite an interesting character, whereas she's asexual, she's a virgin, she doesn't have sex with anybody in the myths, but she expresses maternal instincts by helping people on Earth. Like she's kind of like this mother who's not a mother at the same time.
Yeah, that's very true. She is such a mother goddess without that literal understanding of it. I think it's important to sort of address all the different ways we could understand those characters, because we don't really know, you know, and not that there is necessarily a truth, because they're fiction and based around, you know, so much history and so many things changed over so many years. Sometimes I feel bad calling them fiction because I desperately want them not to be, but
yeah, I know. Well, I honestly just think of them as being real beings, because it just makes living life so much nicer. Like you just kind of have an explanation for everything.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I kind of feel that way until I'm trying to like, I guess sort of understand it in a more finite way, because I just I feel like I have to wrap my head around how one of them would be, or the different versions over time. I have to do so much of that I think I end up having to fall onto them being fictional, but in my heart of hearts they are not, and in the way that I, you know, think of these stories, they are definitely not, because you know, I think about them and the way their personalities would be and the way their interactions would be, and I could think about them forever, clearly.
I know. Yeah. I'm researching Welsh gods and goddesses at the moment. So I'm looking into those deities. And I've got this really amazing book. Oh, I can't find it somewhere. But it gives you like a brief of how to set up a shrine for them. So when you're going through each god and goddess, they tell you like what items to leave out and like what pictures to hang up to like summon them. And I just can't wait to start like a little shrine, because I've never ever been like that religious or anything, but just to have that in my room and just to kind of think like those are gods and goddesses that were on this land, because I'm quite patriotic and I just love being Welsh, so just to have that would be so nice. And I think that Welsh mythology is not really, well, it's not really taught in schools. You kind of learn it in primary schools, so when you're from the age of like 5 to 10 sometimes, and then sometimes it'll come up in Welsh class. But I think looking through those would be really interesting and kind of giving them more of a personality, because there are some really fierce women in Welsh mythology.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That must be so nice to have that sort of history and mythology to have, yeah, to take on from your own country.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's pretty nuts, to be honest. But it is quite,
yeah,
it is quite similar to Greek mythology. There are similar topics, which goes to show that mythology, we all have this shared sense of mythology in these certain beings.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all universal.
What I wanted to say was I want to make Medusa the face of change now. She's going to be the icon. She is... I did an illustration last week, a couple of weeks ago, of her taking a snooze during lockdown, and then one of her snakes telling her to get the fuck up, because it's time. Like, I feel like we should take her from that idea of her being a victim, and now really showing her as kind of the force that's battling against this patriarchy.
Yeah, well, she's the protectress, so it suits.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah,
I mean, what a queen. Yeah, your illustration of her with the Me Too badge is like one of the highlights of my living room.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's a bad bitch. She's in many people's living rooms now. I always like to put on the card, like, I hope she brings you bad bitch energy, because that is it.
Yeah, that is her. And I love it. Yeah. I love the way she's kind of constantly being reimagined lately.
She seems
to have a resurgence every couple of weeks, even. It's great.
Yeah, I know. I love it. But yeah, that's the main thing of like taking these female characters. Like, I mean, she is a Gorgon, so she is technically kind of like creature, monster.
Yeah, but in some indications, it's odd with her. You never know.
But yeah, but that is like how men consider women sometimes. They're these creatures that they can't understand, so to have her as like the face of change would be amazing.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on and doing this. That was so much fun, and I've always wanted to kind of expand upon the way I tell these stories to people who know more than me or have just different insights into these things, so mm-hmm. I'm so glad I got to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Liv. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure. I've had so much fun.
Thank you all so much for listening to that. I really hope you enjoyed it. You should make sure that you follow Mary on Instagram. It's at Myths and Tits. I will put it in the description of this podcast. She is such a joy. Her art is so incredible. I absolutely love it. I have so many of her pieces up around my apartment. Could not be a bigger fan. So make sure you check her out. And thank you all. You're the best. I am Liv and I love this shit.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.